Greetings to you, my sweet, darling children of the earth. It's 2024, and you are living in the year of the wood dragon. Wow, I've never even heard of wood dragons. I used to play D&D when I was a kid, and there's all kinds of cool dragons, green dragons, red dragons, blue dragons, chromatic dragons, but I don't remember a wood dragon. That is the best and worst kind of dragon to be, because theoretically, you can breathe fire, but you're made of wood. What a better descriptor for the times we're in. Here we are, completely interconnected, completely merged with one another, digitally, soon to be neurologically, and obviously all the other ways, the inhalation and exhalation of all the farts of the world or micro, you know what I mean, the flat, you're breathing flatulence wherever you go. No one wants to think about it. Probably shouldn't be spoken out loud, but that's just one of the ways that we're, and you, obviously you're breathing in other stuff too. You're breathing in pollution. You're breathing in those chemtrails that they're spraying on our cities. You're breathing in your own BO. I'm certainly doing that at this very moment. And you're exhaling. And the plants are breathing it. And other people are breathing your exhalate. You know what I'm getting at here. I don't need to go on and on with my really bad understanding of ecology and respiration. But that's always freaked me out, you know, like how many exhalations does anyone breathe in during a lifetime? Like if you added up all the different things you're breathing in and could use some, what are those things called? Mass spectrometers, the stuff they use in forensic files. Then your life, just analyze everything you've breathed in. What percentage of that is human breath? And of those human breaths, how many of them were the final exhalations of dying people? Like 3 death exhalations from strangers? I mean, if you had to bet in Vegas, if this was a bet, where would you put your money? Over 10 full death exhalations of people you'll never meet, or under 10? I think I'm going over 10. But then we're also interconnected to the quantum level and all that stuff. And then we're on the same planet and technology is just sort of demonstrating to us that terrible, beautiful reality. But the wood dragon, see, that's the fire part. The technology is the fire part. The wood part is our society capable of being able to breathe fire at this point? This is the crazy things you read these days. You read actual news stories on the potential of some AI-induced extinction. I mean, it's the same story with a new monster. Before AI, we were worried about nuclear bombs, which is still a threat. Before that, why, remember Y2K? And of course, the sun is not behaving lately, sending out big blasts all over the earth. But it's that quality in humanity that blows my mind. Man. The fact that we are able to make things that can destroy us. All of us. Year of the Wood Dragon. And also, it doesn't have to be all bad. I mean, my God. If you're a wood dragon, all you have to do is like figure out a way to, I don't know, jump in a lake before you breathe fire. I mean, there's ways to mitigate the problems that wood dragons must run into all the time. Wear some kind of fire-resistant dragon firefighter outfit, maybe. I'm sure they have their own solutions to the problem. Another term for the situation is dangerous opportunity. This is all the prophets of the singularity talked about what we're all experiencing, or at least reading about, the faster our computers get, the more accessible the technology becomes, the more promise there is for innovation. You know, Google just discovered, using AI, I think two new antibiotics to fight against antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And this stuff is going to start coming down the pipes more and more and more, just out of the blue. We're going to start seeing cures for things we thought incurable. We're going to start seeing medicines that do things that we thought were impossible, potentially anti-aging. I am praying for some working hair cream that doesn't mess with your sex drive. Not just for me, but for the world. Because I want to see that. I want to see a world where all of a sudden all these ancient, bald billionaires have long, flourishing, like vampire-level hair just flowing over their shoulders. Rupert Murdoch, but with just beautiful hair. I'll join them in that. I won't be ashamed of it either. But then also, if you're going to get that kind of technology, that's the problem. What goes along with it is the other stuff it'll discover. While scientists are eagerly studying protein folding in some laboratory to cure breast cancer, guaranteed there's people trying to figure out ways to just turn humans into $20 bills. Just cut to the chase. Some beam or some way, you just blast somebody and they turn into a pile of fresh $20 bills. So this is the world we're in. It's the year of the wood dragon. What can you do other than masturbate late at night after eating pizza? How are you setting yourself on fire, my friends? That is a terrible intro, but I'm going to leave it. I was trying to be so poignant. You know what it is? I feel great. Sometimes when I record interviews with my guests, I wait to do the intros. But because I'm glowing from the conversation I just got to have with Neil Allen and Annie Lamott, I guess I feel poignant now or something. So I'm not going to edit it. I'm just going to leave that, whatever that was there. And then all you have to do is upgrade it in your own mind. Like, take what and then imagine if Carl Sagan said it or something. And then that's what I meant. Do that with everything I say from now on. Neil just wrote a wonderful book, and I really hope that you will order it, because my God, what a fantastic problem to address, a global problem, a world problem. You know, when people are talking about the environment being all fucked up, they generally leave like this human psyche out of the mix. Ice caps melting, sea levels rising, pollution, lack of water, too much water. But nobody talks about you. We're as much a part of the environment as anything else. And this human thing that we're all doing right now is riddled, at least for many of us, with varying degrees of self-loathing, dark critiques of things we just did or will do or haven't done, a general cumbersome, horrible entanglement with some kind of hissing monstrosity that loves to shit in our food whenever it can. So this is me. This is not from his book, obviously. So it's a good book. But Neil, he kind of blew my mind today. Like, you know, I have guests on, they have methods that maybe I don't necessarily like align with, practices that I'm never going to try. But in this one, he took a practice from his book, which when you hear it done live, go ahead, roll your eyes at it. It was embarrassing and I didn't want to do it, but it worked. It's so weird. I'm not going to spoil it for you. You'll be able to do it with me if you want to. And truly did not expect it to work. And it wasn't like, I mean, we're not talking about like breaking into like DMT hyperspace or something like that level of like astonishment, but definitely a wild exercise that helps illuminate your projections. It is very interesting. I hope you'll stick around for that. I had no idea that Neil's wife, Annie, would be on the podcast, which was an extra surprise. She is truly one of my favorite authors on the planet. And unfortunately, she just had a dark run-in with the Swifties, which got picked up by all the newspapers and got printed everywhere. And it was really interesting to hear someone who I consider to be one of the great writers living today talk about what that's like to be in the heart of a swarm of Swifties, to experience the what it's like to just get suddenly attacked for a completely innocent tweet. So stay tuned for that. Really interesting. A wonderful podcast. But before you listen, go to Amazon.com and order Neil's new book, Better Days, Tame Your Inner Critic. Stop setting yourself on fire and enjoy being a dragon. That's not the title. It's just Better Days, Tame Your Inner Critic. I said the dragon stuff. Why am I going back to that? Okay. Before we jump into this very quickly, I've got some shows coming up. Denver Comedy Works. I am headed your way next weekend. I cannot wait. That's going to be the 11th, 12th, and 13th of January. This show is almost sold out. So if you are thinking about coming, please just get the tickets in advance. After that, you can find me at Helium in Indianapolis. I'm going to be there January 25th, January 26th, and January 27th. I cannot wait to see you there. I've also got lots of other dates coming up. You can find them all at DougGetrussell.com. Finally, I have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/DTFH. You'll get commercial-free episodes of this podcast, and we gather and talk, though I have been completely disappointing in scheduling regular family gatherings. My dear family, don't worry. Now that we're in the new year, they will start again next week, and I'm sorry. I love you guys. I can't wait to see you again. Okay, everybody, please extend your psychic tendrils, open your hearts, prepare your minds, have the courage to get past the part of you that cringes at spiritual exercises and do the spiritual exercise that I did with Neil. Otherwise, we're both going to seem insane. Please welcome back to the DTFH, Neil Allen and Annie Lamott. Neil, welcome back to the DTFH. Annie, Hare Krishna. So wonderful to see you too. Sorry I missed you in Hawaii. I heard it was wonderful.
No, we missed you. It was a nightmare without you.
Yeah.
I doubt that.
How could we steal your babies unless you're there?
Yeah.
Is that why you didn't come?
Yeah, it is why we were going to come, but, you know, we had to hire our security that we hired after you threatened kidnapping our children. Said it's probably not a good idea to bring the babies in a close proximity of the people who want to kidnap the babies. Yeah, well, I'm sorry.
We're pretty sure we'd be better parents, so it's good for the babies.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people on my team kind of disagree with that, including the kids.
Well, then obviously you're a permissive parent and you wouldn't be able to discipline them the way that we could, having grown up in a different century.
I don't like the learning shed thing you guys do. I think that's bad. Like, it's hot. There's no ventilation. I don't see what you learn other than fear and subordination to authority.
And self-loathing.
Oh, yeah. And self-loathing. Yeah. Do we really need to learn that? Isn't that, that doesn't need to be taught. No, that's something you just naturally sort of pick up along.
Yeah.
And you know, this book, what a great time for this book. You know, I have a rule that I'm becoming increasingly stringent about, which is I don't read comments. Like, I'm off that awful, sick technological inhalant that so many people are breathing in all day long, just because I realize, like, what am I looking for here? Like, either it's going to puff up my ego or it's going to make me want to kill myself. Yeah. Like, there's nothing in it that, and your book is addressing the internalization of this, you know, I mean, this aspect of the mind that even if you avoid reading the comments has decided to take on the job of reminding you intermittently, generally at random times, what an abject piece of shit you are. Yeah. Just out of the blue. Yeah. Way more effective than the trolls because it's you. Yeah. What inspired you to write the book, Neil?
I lucked into an experience where I accidentally, I suppose, objectified my inner critic, you know, the voice that says, you're a piece of shit, you're unlovable, or simply says, oh, I can't believe you did that again, right? The bully.
Yeah.
It's a bully, and it treats me like a child who can be bullied, right? And I just lucked into an experience where it objectified itself as a little gremlin on my shoulder. And that ended up being my tool that essentially, it was the first tool to bring me into a spiritual practice. Now, along the way, oddly enough, it reduced my anxiety a great deal. And along the way, it proved to be the centerpiece for everything that I have done that is involved in clearing away the obfuscations or the filters of the ego, right? Which is what all the ancient traditions talk about. But they often don't give you a very good guide. They give you great guides to meditation, and they give you great guides to what the spiritual world looks like, and they encourage you to join groups, and they have all sorts of tools. But then they usually tell you, do your self-inquiry on your own, right? Oh, you'll figure out what's wrong with what's being said inside you, right?
Yeah.
And so by objectifying itself, it did two things. One is it made it something that it was easy to examine. So I could actually see how it functioned. I'd never really seen how it functioned. And the second thing that it did was over time, it persuaded me that it was not actually part of me. That I had thought, and I think everybody thinks this, that I've run into at least, I had thought it was a necessary part of me that kept me moral. Right. And that's kind of the way your psychology looks at it. Generally speaking, it's a necessary part that's annoying, but it keeps you moral. It keeps you from being homicidal and predatory and all sorts of things that apparently people seem to think Freud and the Judeo-Christian Bible are correct in saying that you're a bad seed and that you left to your own devices, you'll go around so selfish that you'll kill and rape for pleasure. Right? Well, it turns out that's just not true.
I think we should be allowed to kill and rape. I agree with you 100%. This is my hobby. Some middle-aged dudes get into woodworking. You need something.
Yeah,
I'm glad you said it. I agree completely.
Exactly. So,
you know, that is
unfortunately, you're a very bad you're very bad, Duncan, at killing and raping, because unfortunately it's not actually true to you. You know, you may want to be that, but that's just like wanting to be, you know, Elon Musk or Donald Trump or a great basketball player, right?
I don't mean to take this to an absurd point. I think it's the point you're trying to make. Yeah, I just have never thought, like, did Jeffrey Dahmer, look, upon, like, setting up one of his skull altars, think you could have done better? You never.
You know, there's actually a serious question in there, which, and I get hit with this a lot, which is, well, if you didn't have an inner critic bullying you and watching over you this way, wouldn't there be more Jeffrey Dahmers? And I point out to them, the inner critic doesn't really work for Jeffrey Dahmer, does it? So that's not much of a an argument. You're either Jeffrey Dahmer or you're not, and inner critic or not. And in fact, there are very, very few Jeffrey Dahmers. Thank goodness.
Well, we don't know yet, but we will.
But another eventually thing, if I can ask the arm candy, if I can interrupt.
Yes.
The other thing that the voice is so diabolical in doing is just keeping you small and scared. Yeah. So Duncan, you and I talk about our writing and how we have neither of us has ever once sat down and thought, this is so exciting, a new day, here I am at the keyboard. You sit down and you think, I am so fucked. The well has run dry, and people talk about me behind my back because they think that they say, oh, she thinks she's so funny, not, and whatnot. And it's that voice that keeps you so scared and small about who you actually are, which is creative and a mixed bag, you know, very deeply human, very generous and touching, and also kind of all the different things that we are. And it makes you feel the shame of thinking that you can do something successfully, that you can try something new.
Well, I want to say this. This will not be popular. I realized a long time ago the usefulness. I like Gremlin. Yeah. My inner critic, when I think of Gremlin, I think of something cute. Mm. Some time ago, I realized, wow, Satan, what a wonderful tool for taking all of that and just putting it into a nice compartment. Satan, not in the like romantic Luciferian way. If there were an embodiment of all the bitterness, hate, delusion, mm-hmm. warped perception, mm-hmm. and intentional aggression in the world, it would be pathetic. It would be angry, jealous, unhappy. And as a function of its personality, it would only want to spread that into you. I'm saying if we embody. And I found that to be so. I love get thee behind me, Satan. Or at least the acknowledgement of this thing as being, yeah, it sucks. It's gonna, Annie. I mean, my God, you should see what I wrote today. You probably would not talk to me anymore. The it strikes me as like so. And now I'm critiquing the critic. You know, that's the other problem is now suddenly you get this telescoping critic. Now you are accusing some aspect of yourself or non-self as being Satan. And then you're critiquing that thing, and that thing critiques the next. You would get an infinite, never-ending echo of critique. So what is the method of cutting the head off the serpent here?
Yeah, it turns out, fortunately, the serpent, the inner critic, isn't very smart. So we think it's diabolical, or we think it has the wisdom of the ages in it. Actually, that's what it pretends to do, is to have authority over you in your decision making and to be more moral than you are. And so when you objectify it and bring it out into the open, you discover it actually only has enough morality to talk to a 6-year-old. Right. And by the time you're 17, everybody, by the time they're 17, they're more sophisticated and better at making moral choices than their bullying voice inside. But I'm gonna, my purpose in this book and in the world right now, I think, is to show people a very simple thing. It isn't you. And I'm going to show, if you don't mind running the risk of either great radio or bad radio, I'll do it with you. I'll do this kind of central and people who are listening along to this can try Let's to do it themselves. It's a simple exercise. So I'm going to ask you couple of questions first, Duncan.
All right.
Do you mind if I do this?
No, okay. I don't mind
Do you
at all.
Mind being a guinea pig and being like, well, it's, you know, you're used to being tortured by something, right? I'm going to torture you, right?
I just, on the last podcast, spent 7 hours on a song about filleting dogs, Neil. So,
wow. Do you know that was the first porn movie I saw?
Let's not bog down on this.
It was a Swedish, Swedish blue movie.
Can we possibly move on from this?
I wonder what that did to me.
Okay. All right. I mean, I'm a Sunday school teacher.
All right. I'm sorry.
I said fillet. I tried to clean up the language.
A dog.
Yeah.
I draw the line.
Well, I'll send you the. Let me send you the song, okay?
And I'll send you the link to the movie, okay? Yeah. All right. So here, I have a couple of questions. The first thing is, tell me some of the, you know, unadorned actual words that your inner critic tells you from time.
Fraud.
To time. Yeah.
Time waster.
Yeah.
Give it up. You're wasting your time. Yeah. You're a fraud. What are you doing? Yeah. You can't just write. Like you. How long did it take you to learn to do stand-up? Oh, you're going to sit down and write?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, go ahead, open micer. Maybe in 2 decades, something.
That's good.
Mid-level. Yeah, I could go on
for 5 hours. Yeah, no, we can all go on forever, but I think that your listeners all have heard in their own lives, in what they do in their lives, the exact same kind of messaging, right? It's always kind of the same. When you hear it, Duncan, when you hear that voice, whose inflections from your childhood does it have?
All right, hold on. Now I got to think about it because I have to summon it up.
Yeah.
Hold on. You know, man, I want to be able to answer that in some clear way. Like, it sounds like my dad, which it doesn't. No Southern twang to it. No, it doesn't sound like my mom. It doesn't really. I wish it's more vaporous than that. Okay. At least in my, it's like a vaporous sort of musty, phantomy, sort of translucent, brownish muck.
If you're
that has a mouth.
If your superego, if your inner critic, your inner critic and your superego are the same thing. Superego is just the name that Freud gave it. Inner critic is the popular name for it. Right. Same thing.
Okay.
So if your superego or inner critic is vague, it probably means that it couldn't find really good bullying sounds from its mother or father. But 80% of people, their inner critic sounds like their mom nagging them. Most of the rest of the 20% is their dad barking at them. And some are, it's a grandmother, another caretaker. And some people absolutely can't distinguish it from themselves. And you, and it doesn't matter because it's all made up anyway. It's going to be a snarky inflection, which is more important than whose inflection.
Yeah.
So now you've heard it. It's kind of this vague sound. Where in your physical, the physical geography of your body do you hear it emanating from?
You know, when you don't drink coffee and you get that shitty coffee headache, it's kind of like, it's not a migraine. It's like, but it's like, and but it's that, but it sort of creeps into the chest too. It's up in the head, and then it goes down into the chest where it shows up as a kind of like exhausted despair.
Okay. So in the top of your head, pull it out of your head with your arm, hold your arm out with your palm facing you, right? Either arm, right? Okay. Now look at the palm. You've pulled your inner critic out of your head or out of your chest, or most people hear it in their head, coming from their head, some in their chest, some in their solar plexus. Wherever you've heard it, pull it out, hold it in your palm of your hand at arm's length from you, and stare at the palm of your hand, and the palm of your hand will show, you will see a person, a thing, or a creature usually.
That's really weird. Yeah, I do see it. It's like a little, like, sinister little smiley face with, like, creepy eyes and a, and like a, it's like definitely like elven ish.
Okay.
I see the gremlin thing you're talking about. Right. Maybe it's just because
it can look like a soccer ball. It can look like a puddle. It can look like your father, and you can look like anybody or anything.
Neil, my hand. What does it mean? My hand is starting to bleed, like out of the like as though a nail had been.
There we go. Your stigmata.
What does that mean?
Yeah, it means you're Jesus. You know, and we'll discover that once your inner critic is removed, you'll find your true Jesus. So there you
are. In the learning shed.
And what's the expression on its face?
It's a it's like, you know, like a it's like a sneering grin.
Yeah, they're always either kind of a frozen neutral or snarky or sneering. And think about it, your inner critic only has that emotion, right? It doesn't have a full breadth of
emotion.
Let
me just say this to the radio audience. I know this sounds ridiculous, everyone listening. This must sound ridiculous. I know you're thinking, there's no fucking way you see a sneering, sinister elven gremlin thing in your hand, but I'm telling you, like, this is I see it.
Yeah.
I mean, not like
yeah.
on DMT, but about, like I see it in the creases.
About, yeah. When I do this exercise with clients or in workshops, and I've done it with hundreds and hundreds of people, 90% of people actually see right away, very quickly, a face. And the face
I didn't want to see it.
Yeah, I know.
I had a whole joke set up. My hair is falling out, so it's my see hair. This dumb hair loss joke, but yeah, I see the thing.
And really I'm gonna annoying. Even if you don't see it, if you're out in the audience and you don't see it, this will still work. Oddly enough, I'm gonna keep looking at it at arm's length, and Duncan, I'm gonna feed you some questions, and I want you to All say right. the question aloud. To we'll call it Elf. Okay, let's call it Elf. Say aloud to Elf the question. Elf will answer and tell me aloud so that everybody can hear what Elf says in response, right? In Elf's words. So the first question.
Did he do this to you? I'm sorry, Neil. Did he do this to you?
On our second date. On our second date.
She can.
But that's why I went back for a third, because it literally blew my mind. Yeah.
Turns out trippy experiences on dates are kind of sexy. Yeah. So this is a trippy experience. So the first question to ask it aloud is, when did you take charge?
When did you take charge? Always been in charge. Always been in charge.
Okay. Who put you in charge?
Who put you in charge, Elf? Oh. Obvious one. You did.
Okay. Why are you still in charge?
Well, because you let... Why are you still in charge? Because you let me be in charge.
Okay.
Such an hassle.
I'd like to take charge for a while. Is that okay?
I'd like to take charge for a while. Is that okay? Poison my wife.
Okay. I'm asking a yes or no question. I'd like to take charge for a while. Is that okay?
I'd like to take charge for a while. Is that okay? No.
Okay. What are you worried will happen if I take charge?
Oh, it's saying everything falls apart. Okay. What a piece of shit.
What makes you think everything will fall apart if I take charge?
What makes you think everything will fall apart if I take charge, Elf? Oh, now it's sort of like being like dodgy. It's like you know the answer to that.
Okay, ask it again. What do you think? I need an answer. What do you think? Why
what
do
you think,
things will fall apart if I take charge?
Why do you think things will fall apart if I take charge? Oh, because you can't do anything, you know.
What makes you think I can't do it by myself?
What makes you think I can't do it by myself? I mean, this is an annoying answer. I wish it was some mystical, cool thing. It just says, I don't know.
Okay. I think I can. And I'm not worried.
I think
worried.
I can.
And I'm not worried about that. I can take that risk. And if it doesn't work, you can come back.
Hold on. Let me cover its ears. What if I am worried?
All right. Don't worry about that. I'm feeding you questions. So the next
okay,
question
say it
is,
again.
Are you worried something bad will happen to you if I take charge?
I'll become irrelevant, it says.
Yeah. I promise I won't annihilate you.
I promise I won't annihilate you.
And by the way, you mean that. And the next thing to say to it is, ask it is, isn't it tiring running the show all the time?
Absolutely. Sick of it.
Yeah. So how would you like to go into semi-retirement as my occasional ethical advisor?
It's so funny. This is so weird. Everyone, I'm telling you, this works. It's so weird. This is weird, Neil.
No, you have to say that to it, Duncan.
Yeah.
Tell me to say it.
How would you like to go into semi-retirement as my occasional ethical advisor?
It's saying it wants to be a bird.
Okay, you can be a bird.
Okay, you can be a bird.
Okay, and you can hang around. But you can't meddle in my life unless I ask you to.
But you can't meddle in my life unless I ask you to.
Is that okay?
It's totally like... It seems like it doesn't seem as sinister either now.
Yeah. Yeah. You've relieved it of a lot of its worry. Tell it, I know this is going to be hard for you because you have the habit of running this show.
I know this is going to be hard for you because you have the habit of running the show. It says, no, I don't.
Okay. This is really important to me, and I'm really glad you're going to stay quit meddling.
Oh, see, now it just kind of sarcastically said, good luck.
Yeah. Okay. What are you worried? Why are you worried I can't do this? Yeah. Why are you worried I can't do this?
See, now it's just being like, we'll see. It's doing like that. Okay. It's doing like mic drops.
Okay. Now, okay. So I need a positive affirmation that you will step aside to the best of your ability in this experiment.
I need a positive affirmation. Say it again. What do I say to it?
That you will step aside as best as you can for this experiment.
I need a positive affirmation that you'll step aside as best as you can for this experiment. It just says I love you.
Okay. I want to thank you for saving my life when I was a kid.
Oh, that's sweet. Hey, thank you for saving my life when I was a kid.
What's its expression?
This is why you're making me do this on my podcast. It's sweet.
Yeah. And just put it back into your head right now.
Physically.
Back into my head.
Yeah.
Weird. That is, okay, that is very weird. Everyone, that is weird.
Okay, here, I was put you want to hear spot. Weirder? You want to hear weirder? They all answer the questions about the exact same way.
Mm-hmm. That's real weird. Yeah.
They're all the same.
Who put you in charge?
Inner critic is the same as everybody else's inner critic. If they give you a slightly different flavor, it doesn't matter. They're roughly the same. You want to hear weirder? They all answer the questions about the exact same way.
Mm-hmm. That's real weird. Yeah.
They're all the same.
Who put you in charge?
Inner critic is the same as everybody else's inner critic. If they give you a slightly different flavor, it doesn't matter. They're roughly the same.
That is so fascinating.
Yeah. They're not you, right? You were talking to somebody that was clearly not a real person, right?
Yeah.
And it's a made-up person that's got a very narrow emotional band. And by the way, they're all more worried about their own survival than your success as a mature human being.
Right.
And now I think that's weird. I think that having a facsimile of a person that clearly isn't a biological person is hanging around and bullying me, for that to actually have a survival instinct, that's just weird, right? But they all do. They're all concerned about their survival.
It mirrors the most irritating people you run into in the world. They're all like that. It's like they've embodied the thing completely.
Yeah.
It's the most annoying way a person can be.
Well, the world is an inner critic too. The world's like an alcoholic father, and there's a lot of shaming, and it just scares us to death. But when we were small children, that voice kept us from running out into the street.
Well, that's the thing.
Swimming out too far for us to keep afloat.
You actually weren't under the influence of a superego until you were about 5 or 6 years old. And until you're 5 or 6 years old, there are adults kind of hovering over you, preventing you from making dangerous, fateful decisions like running out into the street. But then you're taken off your leash a little at six. And Freud had a great term for it. He said, you're introjected with your superego. And it's like, oh my God, they took a hypodermic and stuck a nagging mom, my nagging mom, into my carotid artery.
Right.
And I carry her around with me from now on. It's not my mom, it's only my nagging mom. It's not my dad, it's only my bullying dad.
Stop fellating the dog! Over and over and over, it's who I am! I won't do any more of that style joke.
I can tell you one thing, Duncan. Annie will not be promoting this video for her audience.
Oh, I think you underestimate your audience. Many of your audience,
or Annie.
You would be surprised. I don't know what that meant. To me, this thing it projects itself. This is not my original idea. God, I wish it was. You know how Jung said the shadow shows up in leaders, that the collective shadow appears as it will manifest as a thing in society. It will manifest as a thing. And you know, and I don't mean to keep going back to, because I know it's a little hacky, but I'm telling you that, like, the amount of vitriol you encounter on message boards, subreddits, the amount of the what was the word? The introjection. It's like that introjection, that's such a Freudian word, that introjection is now being introjected into the internet. It's like that process. Definitely. It's like we're shoving it in. It's coming out, and this is one of the big problems. I had someone on my podcast whose job at Google was to essentially, this is really reducing it, but you got to keep the AIs from turning racist because the AI is just going through message boards and absorbing all that anger and hate. And if you don't prune it, it starts manifesting that. It becomes that. This digital child that we're all birthing simultaneously, that we're doing it the same thing that happened to us to it.
Well, what's even worse to me is to recognize that all these, let's say we call them trolls that are attacking, right? They actually honestly and correctly to themselves think they are defending. They do not, nobody is on attack actually. And this is true in geopolitics too. Everybody says, I only fired that first shot as a preemptory defensive behavior, right? And if they don't get caught firing the first shot, then they're just like, yay, I'm being defensive, right? But at any rate, everybody's on defense, and everybody thinks the other half is on offense. And that's peculiar and bizarre, right?
See, this is, you know, this what you're saying there. This is where I really run into, like, you smash into this wall, because when I am right, I need the other person to be wrong.
Yeah.
You know, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like you've done something to me.
Yeah.
And then, so the moment you do realize what you're saying, the moment you're forced to like remember, well, no, they're acting like this because they feel like they're defending something and you're defending something. It ruins the whole game.
Yeah.
It messes up all arguments. Like, what? Now I'm supposed to like be compassionate for you and now what are we going to do?
Well, the weirder,
not fight.
Even weirder than that, you start to realize, yes, it was wrong for me to look at it as win, lose, or show. It's actually yes, no, or maybe. But beyond that, it actually didn't actually matter to lose, right? That these dangers, these social dangers that we argue about and get angry about and get sullen about and get self-righteous about have nothing to do with our survival in the world, have nothing to do with things we actually need and can be All of them, 100% of them can be put in their place. But we're not taught that. We're taught, oh, you don't just need food, shelter, clothing, and safety. You need a TV and love and a better standard of living. And if you're not helping the world get a better standard of living and get this kind of momentary fulfillment, then you're a bad person.
Bible trivia time relating to what you just said.
Yeah.
In the Bible. And I don't know which one. Probably it's
preach
not in all
it,
Bibles.
Duncan. But preach it.
Here we
preach
are.
It, look.
In the
preach
Bible.
It, Dunk.
What are the first words that angels always say when they decide to communicate with humans?
They say, don't be afraid.
That's it. Don't be afraid. Now, I think there's two reasons they say that. One, the biblical angel is terrifying if you have seen the drawings people have done on it. But I think literalism in the Bible, you're going to run into trouble there. But I think the real reason is because, to your point, this thing you're talking about, the egregore. Have you heard that term, egregore?
No.
It's one of my favorite words. Oh, my God, it's so great. It's essentially the same thing. I think what Jung was getting at in the manifestation of the projection showing up in some event or theoretically a person, but it's like the egregore does not live in a body. It lives in the connection, in the shared fear.
Yeah.
The shared fear of the world is can call it whatever you want, Satan, whatever you want to call it. It's there, but it's not there. You can't see it, but you can see the way people react to it inside of them. And that reaction quite often leads to violence, aggression, lying, all the survival level decisions people make and think they're not evil because I got to survive, man. This is my, and so, it's fear, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's fear over nothing. Mm-hmm. It's fear of the dark. It's fear of under the bed. It's fear of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it is, go ahead, sorry.
Well, I think the root of that fear is probably related to civilization and the fact that once we're out of small isolated tribes and into civilization, we shift from defaulting to trust, which is what small tribes do, to defaulting to distrust. Because in civilization, we live next door to strangers. And that means we don't know what their intent is. And so we project our fear onto them as being bad people, right? Because we realize that since they're not part of our tribe, they might be, and they probably are, barbarians to us. And remember, for 300,000 years, we were tribal people. And we spent 99% of our time around people who were loving and who we trusted, and there was no private property, and there was very little hoarding, and, you know, an occasional bit of adultery, and that was about the only thing bad that happened within the tribe, right? And then 1% of the time, we were with strangers, and those strangers were dangerous to us, right? We had every right by nature, apparently, because we're just like monkeys or dogs this way. We had every right to kill those strangers if they stepped onto our territory. We didn't do it immediately, right? We waited until they committed some petty infraction, then we killed them or started a war with them over resources. But now for only 10,000 years, we've been civilized. We have not yet learned how to live with the fact that we default to distrust.
Right.
And once you're defaulting to distrust, you're entering into the kind of the modern psychological way of looking at it is object relations, where the other person, because you default to distrust, becomes a projection. And instead of there just being you and me in the room, there's a field, a filter in between us. And that filter can be made up of defensive personality structures, or it can be made up of fear directly, or it can just be made up of an uneasy feeling, or it can be made up of a happy feeling. But even if it's a happy feeling, we're only honoring the portion of that person who is on the surface and in the personality. Once we're personalities talking to personalities, we're projections talking to projections. And that's
okay, let me ask you this. Here's a bullshit question, maybe, definitely putting both of you on the spot. Are you unafraid right now? And if you're not unafraid, what's the longest period of time that you have managed to go without feeling afraid of something, without having, and I don't mean like horror movie terror. I mean the sort of creeping underlying fungal fear. Social, just a general anxiety that has, you're out, you're scared, you don't even know what you're afraid of. So would you consider yourself, either of you consider yourself fearless?
I don't think that's the game. I think the game is reducing the exaggeration of fear in life, right? It isn't eliminating.
You don't think it's, we can get rid of it.
It isn't eliminating it, because if you eliminate it, then you're at war, right? You're going to set a goal, and once you've set a goal, you're going to aim for that goal, and you're going to narrow your world, right? So goals always get in the way of things. And I know this is a time of life when people set intentions, and that's all fine and good. But generally speaking, once it becomes, oh, I'm going to get rid of my fear of death, and I won't be satisfied until I am, you're just screwed, right? Because it's just not going to happen once you've attached to it as something that you believe you need. So the name of the game is, all I ask people to do, all I ever ask people to do, is to start to notice when the bully is talking to them and stop for a second when they catch it and say, oh, that's you, not me.
Yeah.
And by doing that, its characteristics start to appear. It's repetitive, right? And you do it over and over and over again, and you start to see, wow, I'm listening to the dumbest bully in the back of the class, right? And that's who's running my decisions, and I'm smarter, and I'm just as moral, and I'm more appropriate than it is.
Take it easy, man. I was the dumbest bully in the back of the class, okay? And sometimes I said some funny things.
All right. So then
that were mean.
So then the thing that starts to happen is light starts to come in, right? And so instead of running the tape of the triggered reaction to the emotional attack that you, the hurt feeling or the emotional attack or the wrong-headed politician, instead of the tape starting running on and on and on and on, while the tape is running, it will continue to run. I have a little bit of opening in me because I kind of know about the tape a little more. And that little bit of opening is able to kind of sit back and go, look at that. That tape's still running. Huh. What about that? And when the tape runs out, when the trance of the, hostile conflict ends, which it will, right? They all run out. They end and something else appears. My only responsibility is to stop right then and go, I wonder what that was. And I ask myself two things. The first thing that I ask is, I actually ask myself one thing, which is, when did I last see that tape run? And if it was 6 months ago, I go, big deal. I can live with that tape running twice a year. If it was 2 days ago, and it's the third time in 2 weeks that it's run, I have a responsibility to go, I better go look at that tape again and see what the lie is in that tape. And the lie is always the same thing, an exaggeration of a danger that isn't actually a danger. It's a pretense that there is an... Have you ever only noticed a day later that somebody insulted you and that you have hurt feelings from it?
Yes.
Right. And yes, 99% of the time when someone so-called hurts your feelings, you think you need to go into action immediately. There is an immediate and urgent threat. Well, that's false. There is never an immediate and urgent social threat that requires you to get on your high horse and win the argument, win the struggle over time and space.
Yeah.
Can I say?
Yeah, I agree.
Let me say something. Okay. I'm not afraid today, but I was afraid this morning because I'd written a new piece for the Post. I'm writing a series of stuff on aging. I'm being a little bit less young than I was. And I wrote it. I was up really, really early, and I texted my editor and said, I'm going to send you the new piece. And it's very different than what I've written before. And she said, oh, great, I can't wait to read it. And I sent it, and I didn't hear from her. And it didn't cross my mind literally that she has other writers. She's the editor of the opinion section, right? Didn't it cross my mind because she said, oh, I can't wait to read it. And I sat there for an hour, and I thought, the jig is up. You know, she liked the earlier pieces. It's not working anymore. She's trying to figure, she's talking to the legal department to try to figure out a way to break the contract without having to pay me. I did all that. An hour later, she wrote how much she loved it. But another thing I wanted to say was, like, as you know, a weekend ago, Neil was gone. And I wrote very casually on Twitter that I was looking forward to the new year because I thought we might read less about Taylor Swift. Now, I've never heard a song by Taylor Swift. I have zero position on Taylor Swift. It's just that that was the only news. I happen to know that her boyfriend's cousin, I knew what he'd gotten. The cousin had gotten Taylor Swift for Christmas. The boyfriend's cousin. And I felt like, I don't think I can go on. So I just wrote that. And as you know, tens of thousands of people attacked me on Twitter. It ends up in every major newspaper. I end up in Vanity Fair. Thank you, Jesus. My first appearance in Vanity Fair. And it's all bad. It's all bad. It's that I'm a woman hater. And I hate her because she's over and over again, she's such a better writer than I am, right? I'm like 100 years old. She's 35, and she writes pop songs that people love. She's a billionaire. She's done better than I have. All I was referring to was the media coverage. And so the first day, it was really, really bugging me. But I thought, this is just absurd. This is just ridiculous. This is the theater of the absurd. Yes. And then the second day, Neil called, and he said something very sweet, like, are you okay? Because it was really a tidal wave. And he said, in this voice, he said, are you okay? And I just started to weep. And I said, it's really scary, and it feels awful. And it was like it was like a global inner critic. It was what I secretly think about myself made manifest in most major newspapers, tens of thousands of Twitter, and it was so scary. And then Neil said the magic words, and this is what Better Days is about. He said, this is great. And I said, what the fuck? Why is it great? And he said, well, first of all, when that ugly, hateful fear comes to the surface, it can be healed. You can talk to it then. You can deal with it. We can talk about it. You can go to your girlfriend, you know, and now it's not going to run you. It was running you when it wasn't up in the visible world. And then I said, but he said, this is a portal for you, that the inner critic like has a megaphone. And I said, what's the portal? What's on the other side of the portal for me if I do the work? And you know what he said? He said, freedom. And I just got it in a visceral way, that it's the freedom from being run by the internalized and externalized voice that never thought a person like me, a funny looking girl like me, a too bright girl like me who was better at math than all the boys, with this crazy hair and whatnot, could be considered a person of value without having everybody in the world love her. You know, and without having everybody think that I was witty and charming and not a hater, a woman hater, you know, and it was.
That was one other thing that I said to you. And the only part, I don't remember any of that, except that I said to you, these are not your people. Why do you care? They are not your people. Your people would never talk like that to you. I don't mean.
Let me just say that one of them is your people. My wife is a self-avowed Swiftie.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the trolls aren't your people. My trolls. Because your wife didn't troll Annie.
No,
but she did. She did rush in and say, Duncan, Annie is getting canceled. And I'm like, what? Yeah. What would she possibly get canceled for? Like, I'm trying to think of knowing you, hanging out with you. I'm like, they're kidnappers. But I mean, these days, come on, aren't we all? But I kept trying to summon up in my own mind, like, what could she pop? And then she said something bad about Taylor Swift. The absurdity. And I'm sorry, because I do not mean to make light of it. I have friends who've been through it. we're talking about a modern trauma that in all of human history, at least as far as I'm aware, you could be hanging out with your friends in whatever primordial past that Neil's talking about, and you could be like, man, David, Jesus Christ, why is it, I wish people would just shut up about David for like 5 seconds. I want to listen to the birds. And you know, maybe some people would be like, he's amazing. What's wrong with you? Why do you hate men? Why do you hate David? He's great. And that's it. And then everyone would forget. But now watch a video. There's a video on YouTube, many of them, sadly, of people getting attacked by bees. And because my kid went through this period of being interested. And so I'm not showing my kid lots of bee attack videos. I think we stopped after the first one. But, you know, what happens is the initial wave of bees hits. You can't believe you're being attacked by bees. I mean, the first thing is just it's the stages of grief.
Right.
You're in denial. Like, what is this? And then you're swatting them. That's pissing them off. Then you run.
Right.
For a second, the wave stops. And you think those bees have left you alone. They're just trying to find you, and more come the next wave. And you watch these people gradually just fall on the ground, crawling in bees. It's terrifying. This is it's the technological version of a psychic swarm of bees that are just not going to stop stinging you. You interact with them, they get more angry. You don't interact with them, they're like, great, now I can sting more. Mm-hmm. And so it's traumatic. It is devastating to some people.
I didn't say a bad word about her. I referred to the insane media attention. But anyway, I wanted to ask you, Duncan, so you don't read the comments anymore, right? Is that what you said earlier? You don't read the comments?
I don't read the comments.
Yeah, see, I do, and it's addictive. It's a toxic trance. You know, it's mood altering, and it's sort of like that old saying that bad self-esteem is better than no self-esteem, you know, and I can't stop reading the comments, and that's my insanity. But when I talk to Neil and we do the inner critic work, and he convinces me that it's amazing to have this voice externalized that is trashing me and scaring me to death, because I can work with it now, and it's a portal to being free from all of those chains that kept me connected to the culture's criticism of me as not being Barbie.
You started by asking, you know, am I rid of some fears or whatever, or am I rid of fear? The fact is, I'm a hell of a lot less anxious than I was before I did this, and it's directly attributed to it. And if I'm less anxious, that's a big win. That's kind of the whole the whole ball game is anxiety, right? And every bit of my anxiety is curated 100% by my inner critic. So as the inner critic moves to the side, my anxiety reduces. And it's the only thing that I can promise people is that if you are able 10 times a day to say, that's you, inner critic, not me, your anxiety will decline. And then when the inner critic is there, if I'm able to stop and say, or a conflict has ended, and I'm able to stop and say, what was that? I want to examine that. I have won. Mm-hmm. I have won. I don't care anymore whether I'm triggered. Right. I'm going to be triggered until the day I die. Mm-hmm. All I care about is when the trigger's over, am I continuing the tape reel, or am I looking at the tape reel and going, oh, that's just you, tape reel, see you later.
It's a very different experience. Like, one is like you're in a never-ending hellish daydream. The other, at least, you know, you kind of understand you're dreaming here. It's not all the way real. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's like my stupid hippie, stupid hippie, naive view on these things is influenced by Ram Dass, who like really set this very simple, like what I would consider a revolutionary, actionable, incredibly pragmatic method for bringing about a true social change, which is start with yourself. Yeah. He understood, like, we're all little pixels in this, whatever this hyperdimensional Netflix show is, and that if those pixels are anxiety ridden, self-loathing, self-hating, completely in a never-ending vortex of doubt, then how's the world going to look? Right. What kind of TV is that?
Right.
What is that? What are you going to be? What are we all going to be watching there?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think what a great time to get this out. And who knows, you know, if who knows what would happen if people stopped? Because if someone is leaving you some vile, angry comment because you said some flippant tweet about Taylor Swift, what are they saying to themselves?
Yeah.
How do they treat themselves? They know themselves. They don't know you.
Yeah.
Oh, think of that. Think of the level. So, yeah, I think what you've done here is really added to like the positive possibility in a world where everyone's freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And who can blame them? Everyone's lost in the vortex of like other people's. Mm-hmm. Also, when you know, that's I'm sorry, I'm going on here. Any comment somebody left for you? Remember, they're probably on the toilet. And might I also just say, last thing I have to say about it, I was a little dishonest. I don't read the comments before midnight. After midnight's when I dive in, baby. Yeah, when I really want to cut myself.
That's when I go to Google and look up what the symptoms mean, what the latest, what the twinge in my neck feels like. Is it meningitis?
Cancer, obviously.
I heard somebody describe WebMD should be renamed YouveGotCancer.com.
That's the only answer. That's always what it is. Well, you two, I am so lucky to have you as my friends. My kids are lucky if I had to pick potential kidnappers, I don't think I could pick better than you two. It means the world to me that you spent time with me, and thank you so much.
And appreciate it. Don't forget, we've picked your children to kidnap. Yeah. That says something about you.
Yeah. Come on, you say that to every parent.
No, we don't. We've never gotten over the love that we felt from your first little boy in the water of Maui when we got to swim with him and he couldn't take his eyes off of us. And we knew God wanted us to have him.
Yeah. I mean, it's very sweet, but he was looking at me. He was looking at us, too. He wasn't just looking at you.
Yeah,
you know, you guys keep saying that.
You can believe that.
Where can people find this book? It's everywhere, right? Yeah. This is everywhere. And great, wonderful. So do you have a website, Neil? Are you still offering?
The title of the book is Better Days, Tame Your Inner Critic. My website is the title of a previous book, but I've kept it, shapesoftruth.com.
Yeah.
And you can find Annie at IHateTaylorSwift.com.
I don't think I have a website, but on shapesoftruth.com, you will love this, Duncan. There's Neil's 37 tips for writing, and they are, I give them to all of my writing students and all of these workshops I do, because they're really simple, and you just smite your own forehead and go, duh, yeah. You write from the verb, you know, you don't use the adverbs to clarify what the character, you know, you work right on finding the verb. So anyway, that's one of the things I love most at Shapes of Truth.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I will check that out. Yeah. Thank you so much. I hope you all have a wonderful day, mm-hmm. and congratulations on being liberated. You are post swarm. Cause I'll tell you, people I know have been through it. It's real liberation. Like they, some of them come out the other side a little cynical, and a little down on humanity as a whole.
Yeah.
But if you're on the other side and just feeling free, well, amen.
Amen. I love you, Duncan. See you soon.
Love you. Love you, Neil. Thank you. Thank you, Neil.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Hare Krishna. Thank
Hare Krishna.
You.
Hare Krishna. Thank you.
That was Neil Atlin. All the links you need to find his book will be at duncantrussell.com. Along with links to his website and Annie Lamott. Send her a nice tweet, y'all. Just, we got to counteract whatever this madness was. Send her something sweet. She deserves it. And for God's sake, read any of her books. They're incredible. We will be back next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.